like she was just handed an Oscar for her performance.
I rather like it when you beg.
My God, Genevieve, I choke out. Are you trying to kill me? She grins devilishly, crimson and saliva smeared across her chin.
How else will we spend eternity together? November 17th, 1944. Ronaldo said he'd visit me tomorrow, and it's all I can think about. I wonder if he'll touch me again, or use his tongue in all his favorite places. They are also my favorite places. Though I can't help but wonder if he'd like my tongue on him, too. I've thought about it many times over the months, even dreamed about it. But I've never done something like that before, so today, I decided to practice. I never thought I'd live to see a day where I'm stuffing a banana down the back of my throat, but there I was, gagging on a piece of fruit. My eyes watered instantly, and a tear tracked down my cheek. And I just knew that if Ronaldo were there watching me, he would have loved the way I looked. Now, I don't know if I will ever look at bananas the same. Chapter 28, The Raven, December 22nd, 1944. There's a deep chill scattering down my spine like tiny little mouse feet, causing me to shudder. I'm unsure if it's from the snowfall today, the freezing temperatures working their way into Parsons Manor, or because there's a decrepit soul standing behind me. I glance over my shoulder, wondering, if there is someone there that I can't see, what would they think of my diary? That you are going to burn in hell. Possibly. My mother always claimed so. Maybe all this time she was actually onto something. If that's the case, I suppose I'll see her there. I glimpse Ronaldo's form outside the window, wearing all black as he usually does. Excitement thrums in my chest, nearly bubbling out of me as the front door opens, then snicks shut. It takes effort to keep my behind seated in my chair rather than run to him like a lovesick fool, even if that's precisely what I am. However, I am helpless to contain the bright smile from stretching across my face when he appears, a light dusting of snow clinging to his shoulders and fedora. He pulls off his hat before running his hand through his black strands, and just like every other time he comes to visit, my heart stalls in my chest.
What are you writing about today, my love?
He asks warmly, a grin on his beautiful face. My diary is on my lap, open to a page blank, save for today's date. He saunters toward me in such a way that my throat tightens. The man is simply walking, and I'm damn near quivering. I shrug coquettishly. I haven't begun yet. I suppose I have nothing to write about right now.
Does this mean I should give you something to write about, Genevieve?
He asks wickedly. I swallow. Or rather, I try to. It feels as if my tongue has swollen to twice its size. Maybe so. Your visitations have been rather boring, I tease sarcastically. His answering chuckle is devilish, and the sound sends chills down my spine. When he reaches me, he flicks a finger at me, gesturing for me to stand. Frowning, I do so, taking my journal with me. I can only blink at him when he moves me aside so he can sit in the rocking chair, adopting a casual position as he leans back into it. Resting his elbows on the armrests, he smirks up at me.
Aren't you going to sit?
Blinking, I move to crawl onto his lap, but he holds up a hand, stopping me.
You know better.
He croons, tisking at me.
Clothes off first.
My heart pounds heavily as I set my diary on the footstool, then unfasten the pearl buttons that line the length of my wool dress. A tremor racks my body, and goosebumps cover my flesh as I shrug it off, left in my undergarments. The surface of my body is cold, but my insides are steadily heating, warming me from the inside out. Ronaldo licks his bottom lip before biting down on it, leaning his head back and staring at me like he wants to devour me. Invigorated, I unhook my bra, my breasts feeling full and heavy as his stare burns into me. Then I unfasten my crotchless girdle and unhook the garter straps, letting that fall to my feet, revealing my lack of underwear beneath. I stand before him in nothing but my stockings, and a groan leaks from his mouth. The bulge in his trousers is prominent. When he notices my gaze, he quickly undoes his belt and trousers, freeing his cock from the confines.
"Sit on it, Genevieve,"
he orders.
"And bring your journal."
"Bring my journal?" I echo, confused.
"That's what I said."
He doesn't bother to explain himself further, and I'm growing impatient anyway. My knees tremble as I grab my journal and pen from the stool, then crawl onto his lap. He keeps his feet planted on the floor, preventing the chair from rocking as I adjust myself to hover above him. I wrap my free hand around his length, evoking a hiss from his teeth, and line him up with my entrance. There's no question whether I'm drenched. I felt myself wetting my inner thighs before I undressed. So without preamble, I seat myself completely on him, pulling a moan from both of our throats. When I prepare to lift again, his hands slam down on my hips, keeping me seated.
"Uh-uh. Write in your journal."
"What?" I squeak.
"Did you think I wanted reading material while you ride my cock? No, baby, I'm giving you the material. Now, write."
My mouth flops, and he nods toward my diary, gesturing for me to proceed. Clearing my throat, I balance the diary on my arm, and with shaky hands, I write. I'm so full, and he expects me to write when all I want to do is fuck him.
"The first time I saw you sitting in this window, you were writing in your diary,"
he begins, his voice husky with desire and so very deep.
"You were the most magnificent creature I'd ever seen."
My pen stills, and inadvertently I clench around him, drawing out another hiss. I'm desperate for even a smidge of friction.
"I watched you for weeks, and most of the time, you didn't know I was there."
I glance up at him, a little surprised by his admission. So many days, this man stood outside my house and watched me, and I had no idea.
"There were many times I pictured this moment exactly, sitting beneath you while you wrote, your cunt stuffed with my cock and leaking all over my lap."
I bite my lip as I try to write, my handwriting increasingly worsening as he speaks.
"Your beautiful tits on full display, where I can lick and suck them. God, you have no idea how many times I've salivated just thinking about it, how many times I've stroked myself to the thought."
He's driving me wild. His grip on my hips becomes bruising. There's a desperation in his own gaze, suffering from his own games as much as I am.
"I imagined those pretty red lips begging me to fuck you,"
he growls,
"to make you come all over me."
My God, he has no idea how close I am to defying his orders and doing just that. If I roll my hips the slightest bit, he stops me, a warning growl rumbling in his chest.
"I'm not finished,"
he bites out through gritted teeth. "But I am." He wants to play? Then that's exactly what I'll do. I tighten my walls around him, causing him to twitch.
"Genevieve,"
he snaps. "Yes, my love?" I ask innocently, sparing him a glance before I continue writing. Then I squeeze around him again, earning myself another growl.
"Put the journal down."
"I'm not finished," I repeat, quirking a brow. I clench again and keep writing, and his breath stutters out of him. He goes to lift me himself, so I bear down and lock my hips, refusing him as he refused me. His eyes narrow, and he looks seconds away from standing with me in his arms and fucking me anyway. Don't you want to hear what I wrote? I ask coyly. It's about you. He opens his mouth, but I continue before he can say later. I told Ronaldo that I had never touched myself before, and at the time that was true, I read aloud. But since then I've done it many times, sometimes even right next to my husband while he sleeps. I'd reach down into my undergarments and feel how wet I was.
Genevieve.
He speaks my name like a whip cracking in the air, but it doesn't deter me. Softly, as to not rouse the man next to me, I rubbed my clit, thinking of those days where Ronaldo would call me his little whore and fuck me, whether it was my mouth or my cunt, or the times he would lick my pussy so thoroughly I could keep him fed for a week.
God damn it,
he hisses. It was so hard to stay quiet, especially when I made myself come, whispering Ronaldo's name. He tries to move my hips once more, but again I refuse. Instead, I clench around him, a soft moan spilling from his lips.
Please, baby.
He groans, his chest heaving. I grin. It felt so good, but I was always left aching to be filled. I forge on, my cunt, my mouth. I meet his gaze, and my ass felt so empty, so incomplete without him. He tears the journal and pen from my hands, dropping them carelessly onto the floor beside us, hellfire raging in his eyes.
Write me, Mia Rosa,
he orders roughly. I shake my head, biting back a smile. Haven't I told you before? I rather like when you beg. His brow furrows, and his face twists as if he's in pain.
Fuck, Genevieve, please.
He pleads, his voice lined with gravel.
Please ride my cock. Please make me come. Please fuck me. I need it so bad, baby.
I moan. Oh, good boy. You sound so pretty when you beg. His eyes flare, raging infernos within, and I roll my hips, giving in to what we desperately need. My head drifts back, and my body takes control, grinding against him with vigor, his pelvis creating the perfect friction against my clit.
Fuck yes, that's it. Just like that.
He whimpers.
Let me suck on these beautiful tits.
Lost in the euphoria, I have enough sense to lean forward, meeting him halfway. His mouth wraps around my nipple, licking and sucking on it forcefully, and sending another shockwave of pleasure straight to my core. I dive my fingers through his hair, holding him to me as he trades between using his tongue and his teeth. Lift your feet up, let the chair rock, I pant, pulling away from him briefly. His legs are long, and it takes effort to maneuver them until he can hook his feet on the base rail beneath the stool. Once he does, I arch my back and balance my hands on his shoulders. The motion of the chair causes me to wobble at first. It takes a few tries, but soon I'm able to use the momentum to my advantage, allowing me to lift up and down on his length with ease. With this new angle, he hits a spot inside of me that takes my breath away. My stomach tightens, an orgasm quickly building.
Fucking Christ!
Ronaldo groans, cupping my breasts in his palms and pushing them together, placing open-mouthed kisses and nipping all over.
You fuck me so good.
You take it so good, I whisper, diving one of my hands back into his hair, tugging the strands tight. My eyes roll as the pleasure heightens, my hips tightening and stuttering as it builds to a sharp point. Ronaldo, I gasp. He releases my breasts and grabs onto my hips, taking over and guiding me up and down on his cock.
Yes, yes, that's it.
He mutters, urgency in his tone.
Come for me, baby. I want you to milk my fucking cock.
My hips still. Then I erupt seconds later, a dizzying wave rushing straight to my head. Then I'm grinding mindlessly against him, no rhythm to the way I move. Ronaldo explodes soon after, a hoarse shout bursting from his throat before he descends into madness alongside me. Our bodies are no longer ours to control. They're not even one another's. We can only succumb to it, as if God has sent a flood to sweep us away, the waves too powerful to survive. For several moments, I'm cast into blindness and silence, my senses useless. My lungs, too, as it's impossible to draw in a breath. I'm drowning, and it's so peaceful. Finally, the orgasm retreats, and I'm able to come up for air. We embrace each other tightly, his face in the crook of my neck while I slump over him. I tremble violently in Ronaldo's hold, and my throat feels raw as little gasps and pants uncontrollably rush out of me. Oh my God, I heave breathlessly, aftershocks causing me to twitch and jolt. I pull away enough for him to tip his head up toward me.
What the fuck did you just do to me?
December 22nd, 1944.
Since I won't see you on Christmas, I brought your present today,
he tells me quietly. We're lounging on the couch, the two of us completely nude now, but keeping warm thanks to the crackling fire a few feet from us. I lay my head on his chest, my fingers tracing invisible pictures on his skin. I frown, tilting my chin to look up at him. You said no presents.
I said no presents for me,
he corrects. Another grin ticks up the corners of his mouth.
I never said I wouldn't get you anything.
Ronaldo, I whine. That's not fair.
Then I suppose it's a terrible time to confess that it's also my birthday today.
I gasp, sitting up on my elbow to glare at him. Why didn't you tell me? I would have... He rests a finger over my lips, silencing me.
Right here, right now, this is all I could ever want from you, Genevieve. Nothing else.
I frown. But I could have done something special for you.
Baby, the only thing I want for my birthday and Christmas is your love.
He pauses.
And maybe your pretty cunt on my face. Otherwise, I want for nothing else.
I roll my eyes, though I can't help but chuckle. I'm incapable of berating him for his vulgarity and insatiable appetite when I'm no better. What we just did... There are never any words for it. He reaches beneath the cushion behind him and pulls out a small box, holding it in his palm. I hadn't even seen him hide it there when we lay down. My stare pings between his glittering eyes and the black box he's presenting to me. Sighing, I take it, flicking him one last indignant glance before opening it. I gasp. A beautiful red rose brooch shines from within, the petals encrusted in glittering rubies. I sit up, balancing on my elbow as I stare at the piece that surely cost way too much. Ronaldo, I breathe. It's exquisite, but it's simply too much.
It's not nearly enough. If I could, you would have a ring on your finger.
He rebuts.
But I will settle for a brooch for now. I figured it may be something your husband would assume you've had for years.
Emotion clogs my throat as I set the box on his stomach and wrap myself around him. He cradles me to him as I brush my lips against his. Thank you, I whisper against his mouth, also hating that his ring doesn't decorate my finger. Maybe one day, but today... I'm only happy he's here.
Just be careful,
he murmurs between soft kisses.
It could prick you.
I grin against him, my chest so full I can hardly breathe. I would gladly bleed for you. He groans his approval against my lips, and butterflies flutter in my stomach as an idea strikes me. Pulling away, I sit up on my knees, watching him carefully as he stares at me with confusion. Now that I'm no longer in the throes of ecstasy, taking control in such a way has my nerves prickling. But if I am anything, I am brave. The least I could do is make all your wishes come true, I say, staring at him with a half-lidded gaze. It would be awfully rude of me not to. His expression slackens as I straddle his chest, prompting him to readjust a little and give my legs room on either side of him. Then I climb over his face and watch as his mouth parts in awe and a savage hunger ignites in his pale eyes. You wanted my pretty cunt on your face, and now I want you to eat it.
Fucking Christ.
He curses, not wasting another second before he does exactly as I ask. December 22nd, 1944. I'm so full, and he expects me to write when all I want to do is fuck him. God, I can barely concentrate, even as he speaks in that deep, gravel voice of his. I need to move, but he won't let me, and the filthy words pouring from his lips. He's driving me wild. I told Ronaldo that I had never touched myself before, and at the time that was true, but since then I've done it many times, sometimes even right next to my husband while he sleeps. I'd reach down into my undergarments and feel how wet I was. Softly, as to not rouse the man next to me, I rubbed my clit, thinking of those days where Ronaldo would call me his little whore and fuck me, whether it was my mouth or my cunt, or the times he would lick my pussy so thoroughly I could keep him fed for a week. It was so hard to stay quiet, especially when I made myself come, whispering Ronaldo's name. It felt so good, but I was always left aching to be filled. My cunt, my mouth, and my ass felt so empty, so incomplete without him. I never got to finish. He tore the journal out of my hands and crumpled the pages. It was worth it. I found out it is his 37th birthday today, yet he was the one gifting me. I felt terrible at first. Of all days, I did nothing for him except make him beg and climb onto his face. It definitely will not be the last time. Chapter 29, The Raven. January 13th, 1945. I'm in so much trouble. The front door slams and I wince. Dread weighs down my bones as Ronaldo storms into the room, fury in his eyes and his fists clenched. He's livid. It's the first time I've truly seen him look at me with anything other than love and affection. I realize now I've been spoiled, having gone this long escaping his ire.
Why did you let him kiss you?
He asks quietly, his tone rough. I didn't let him. He took me by surprise. I defend, my hackles rising. Ronaldo was hiding within the tree line this morning when John and Sarah left for a day trip to a few markets. I was standing at the door, calling out to Sarah to behave today, when John swooped in and stole a kiss. He caught me off guard and I couldn't react quick enough. John was halfway to the car before I realized what had happened. And the first thing I felt was shame. I hated how he did that. I knew it was wrong to feel so disturbed by a kiss from my husband, yet it felt like he took something from me without permission all over again. A pit had formed in my stomach almost instantly, and I had hoped Ronaldo didn't see.
Have you been kissing him all this time?
No, I shout, my nails forming crescent moons in my palms. I haven't let him kiss me since... My throat closes, but I force the words out anyway. Since before what he did last June. We've hardly touched since you started coming around. That's why I wasn't expecting it, Ronaldo. His chest deflates, but the anger clings to him. And truthfully, I can't even blame him. It's not hard to imagine a woman kissing him, and the burning anger that accompanies that image is undeniable. I understand his wrath, but what would he have me do? Divorcing John when we have a kid together? That's almost unheard of. As if sensing my thoughts, he swings his thin gaze toward me.
I could kill him.
He growls.
I would have no qualms ending his pathetic life, Genevieve.
He takes a step toward me.
I dream about it, and the only reason I don't is because of you.
Because of Sarah, I correct. I am not like you, Ronaldo. I don't wish harm on the man, but make no mistake, it is only Sarah I think of. He snarls, turning away from me as he paces the checkered floor. I feel incredibly helpless and suffocatingly trapped. Worse yet, I can't find it in me to regret my marriage to John, not when Sarah resulted from it. And there isn't even the smallest part of me that could ever wish she didn't exist. I love Ronaldo, but my daughter will always come first.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to only love you in the dark when you deserve to be loved in the light?
My bottom lip trembles and tears well in my eyes, blurring my vision. My heart feels like it's been dropped into a blender, each word slicing until there's nothing left. I do know. You deserve that too, Ronaldo, I whisper. I want to love you openly. I want Sarah to know you exist and get a chance to love you openly too. But what court would grant me that?
Have you tried? Maybe they will allow it, and you'll only have society to deal with. But you've already ostracized yourself from them with this house, haven't you? What's one more decision to truly set you apart from the rest of them?
He takes a step toward me, conviction shining in his eyes.
Do you understand what it's like knowing that when I leave here, another man takes my place, or having to wait for him to leave to take his?
I don't, but I can imagine, and it hurts.
He sleeps in your bed. He is the first person who sees you when you wake and before you sleep.
But he is not the one I dream about, I insist. He is not the first on my mind when I wake, and it's not he who owns my heart. I had hoped my declaration would placate him in some way, but he doesn't look appeased. Torture fills his eyes, and it feels as if he stabbed my heart with a needle and injected his pain directly into it. Believe me, Ronaldo, you are not the only one who suffers when he is near, I whisper, my voice as broken as a future with Ronaldo by my side. We stare at one another silently for a few moments, both of us mourning what could be, but will likely never come.
I am destined to love you from the shadows, Mia Rosa,
he says quietly.
I will never be more than your phantom.
My chest cracks, and tears well over the rims of my eyes. And I can see it. I can see how he stares at me with a hint of bitterness deriving from a fantasy I refuse to allow him. He wants to murder John and rid me of the man who unknowingly shackles me to a life of discontent. It would be so simple for him, too, to hide in the shadows, wait for John to come home, then fire a single bullet into the back of his head. With the snap of his fingers, I would be free of my husband. But how could I live with myself afterward, lying to my daughter every day, insisting that some random criminal broke into our home and took her father's life, when all along I'd be sleeping next to his true killer, slowly inviting him into our home, hoping she would accept him and love him as a stepfather? However, her heart would always have a hole in it, and her sorrow would be my sorrow. How long would she have to suffer, just so I don't have to? Only my suffering might never actually end at all if I had John's blood forever staining my hands. I couldn't live with myself. I couldn't look her in the eyes and tell her such lies. It's a life that would only bring us more pain, not any relief. and I hate that Ronaldo can't see that as I can. Even without words, I know he thinks that time will heal our wounds, and as years pass on, Sarah would find happiness again. She would all but move on from her father's senseless death and settle into a future with Ronaldo as her father. But it's a farce, and he knows it, and the thought of it makes me ill. John isn't the greatest of men, but he doesn't deserve to die. Even if he did, and I could live with myself, there's another important component that is impossible for me to ignore. You work for one of the biggest criminals in the country, Ronaldo, I remind him, forcing stoicism into my tone. You are a criminal, something I've overlooked because I know you are also a good man, but you could not guarantee safety for my life or my daughter's. Even if I could forgive you for taking John's life, I would never, could never, forgive you if your crimes resulted in Sarah's death, too. The muscle in his jaw pulses, and I only know I've struck a nerve because it is a fact that he cannot defend himself from. He knows as well as I do that if I were to have my husband killed and marry him instead, I'd be unchaining myself from a life of discontent, only to chain myself to a life of terror instead. I'd die before I could truly live, because surely my heart would give out from the fear of seeing my daughter hurt or murdered.
I would never let anything happen.
It is not always up to you, Ronaldo. I trust you would protect us with everything you have, but that doesn't mean you would succeed. The words are as sharp as a whip, but I still mean them. He winces, feeling the sting. But is it because of what I said, or because he knows it's true? His expression smooths into cool marble, though the muscle in his jaw still pulsates. My heart thuds heavily in my chest, a strange kind of fear arising. This conversation has been distressing for both of us, but watching him wipe his face clean of his hurt is like watching him wipe his heart clean of me, and that is simply devastating.
Would you have me leave you alone?
He asks, his tone rough yet quiet. Even if my words could escape me, my voice would fail. I shake my head, wanting him to stay as desperately as I need air.
Then what do you want, Genevieve? Because whatever it is, I will grant it to you. At the cost of my heart and my sanity, I will give you whatever you ask of me.
Another tear trails down my cheek. I just want you. He nods slowly, his teeth clenched and his fists tightened.
So then, it is your phantom I will be.
January 14th, 1945. The cold, dreary weather is putting me in a mood that rivals the ice clinging to my windows. Frank even noticed my sour state when he stopped by today. He tried to cheer me up with bad jokes. I'll admit, I laughed at one or two, but I can't seem to muster much more than that. Ronaldo and I argued yesterday. He said he can't stand that I'm still with John. He's incredibly jealous. And I can't say I entirely blame him, not when the thought of him with another woman nearly makes me blind with rage. But Ronaldo's life is still far too dangerous. How could I give up stability for my daughter, for a man whose life could get us killed? I'm at a loss.
Chapter 30, The Phantom. January 14th, 1945.
Manny Baldelli has been spotted outside of Seattle,
Paulie informs Angelo while standing next to his desk with his hands crossed behind his back. Alfonso and I are sitting in the plush chairs, the three of us puffing on our Questare cigars. Normally, I would have turned down the tobacco, but with Genevieve's words from yesterday still clouding my mind, I needed something to release some of the tension. Angelo's fist slams down on his desk, sending pens clattering off the wood and rattling the crystal decanter.
What do you mean he was spotted? Ronnie shot him.
Angelo's face is beginning to purple while red and white splotches form in my vision. It wasn't fatal, Polly affirms. I saw him with my own eyes and clocked him all the way to Don Leonardo Saputo's estate.
A snarl curls my upper lip. Fuckers, I mutter, my fingers beginning to twitch uncontrollably. My mood has been as dark as the sight in my left eye, and even Angelo has trodden carefully with me. The need to kill, it's like a parasite beneath my flesh, taking control over my bodily functions until the only thing I'm capable of is death. The Saputos have made their allegiance to the Baldellis clear, so it's no surprise they're housing him, which could mean they're planning something, likely banking on the fact that Angelo's growing comfortable again after believing Manny to be dead the last 5 months. But Angelo did not become the capo di tutti I capi without reason. When the media gifted him the name, they also gifted him a paranoia that no drug could emulate. He doesn't take a single step without glancing over his shoulder. I grind my teeth and keep my glare pinned to Mona Lisa. If it was possible, the paint composing her face would melt beneath my stare. That slight smile she dons feels as if it's just for me, like she knows something I don't. Whether it's about Genevieve or Baldelli, she'll never tell me. I'm going to the Saputo estate and taking them out myself, I declare stoically, puffing on my cigar as Mona Lisa's smile blurs. The three men's stares land on me at once.
Not alone, you won't, Angelo argues. I arch a brow.
Polly can come if he'd like, I say, but I'm more familiar with the Saputo estate than anyone. Angelo grins.
Ah, yes, you fancied his sister at one point, no?
The only thing I fancied was her lips wrapped around my cock, but that was years ago, and though Lucia would have loved it if I had asked for her hand in marriage, I couldn't stand to hear her high-pitched voice, which is why I could only tolerate her when her mouth was plugged. My fling with her didn't last more than a few months, but it offered me plenty of time to familiarize myself with their estate. Back then, the Saputos were loyal to Angelo, and Don Leonardo was happy to show me around and entertain me over a glass of whiskey. He had hoped I would marry his sister too. Even he couldn't wait for her to find a husband and be out of his hair.
Last I heard, she finally got married,
Alfonso offers. I don't care if Lucia is buried 6 feet under, I bark. If she finds herself in the house, she will wear a bullet no differently than her brother. Angelo whistles, amused by my sour mood. His own spirits are lightening now that I plan to handle the problem instantly. Angelo trusts no one more than me to complete a contract. Manny may have gotten away with his life once, but that won't happen a second time.
Boss, I can confirm that at least 15 men occupy the Saputo estate.
Polly cuts in. He keeps his tone even and his face expressionless, but I know him well enough to sense that he's not fond of only the two of us walking into that fight. But Angelo knows me well enough to sense that I'm not waiting for the rest of the crew to show up. There have been many moments in my life where I need nothing more than to feel blood on my hands. And when those moments arise, not even Angelo can get in my way. We'll come heavy, I clip, taking one last puff of my cigar before putting it out. Or I go alone. Polly dips his chin as I stand from my chair, restlessness holding my muscles hostage. My fingers twitch with the need to fire bullets into as many brains that dare get in my line of fire.
I'll always fight beside you, Ronaldo.
Walking into a den of wolves with only one man beside you is no easy decision, and at this moment, Polly has my utmost respect. Then let's go. I'm not waiting any longer. January 14th, 1945. Return with Manny's head. These were Angelo's parting words, though I didn't bother to respond.
The Saputo Estate is nestled in northern Seattle, nearly taking over an entire block by itself. Leonardo Saputo owns the largest paint manufacturing company in the country, with locations in nearly every city across the board. He uses the business to wash the tens of thousands of dollars the family makes transporting guns. I hope Leo has picked out a suitable heir. The entire car ride to the house was silent, save for Paulie's double-checking that we had enough bullets to win the goddamn war. I park far enough away from the front gate to stay undetected. There, two guards are stationed. The second they see us at the gates, Paulie and I are firing off one shot each, our bullets sluicing through their brains before either of them can reach for their pack sets. Only a heavy chain and a padlock keep the gate secured, just as it was all those years ago. Paulie hands me bolt cutters, and I make quick work of clipping the chain and sliding it free, tossing the tool aside when I'm finished. The outside of the estate is quiet. Trees rustle in the chilly winter air above a light dusting of snow on the ground. I forge ahead, and Paulie keeps to my left, as he always does, an unspoken arrangement between us. Since the moment he found out about the blindness in my left eye, he started stationing himself on that side of me, understanding the vulnerability with my lack of peripheral vision. As we approach, one man walks out onto a balcony on the second floor. Paulie takes aim and fires off a shot instantly. The body slumps over the railing before plummeting onto the pavement below. If they didn't hear us before, they surely have now. Shouts arise from within the house, and I waste no time grabbing my Tommy gun strapped to my back before I barge in, my finger pulling the trigger before the door fully makes it open. Paulie opens fire only a moment later, the two of us quickly taking down three men standing in the foyer. Straight ahead is a hallway and a stairway on the left wall. Entryways to other rooms are on either side of the foyer, right before the staircase, so we split up, taking cover behind our respective walls. Chaos ensues. Return fire zips in our direction. Wooden chunks fly in my face from bullets nicking the edges of the door frames. While they shoot, I glance around, finding myself in a grand living room. Another entryway is opposite me, so I wait patiently, keeping my eye on it. It takes only a few more seconds for Lorenzo Saputo, Leonardo's firstborn son, to appear in the opening. Our guns are both raised, but I pull my trigger faster. Bullet holes riddle his face before his finger can twitch, and then he's tumbling to the floor. I turn back toward the entryway facing the foyer, and the moment the Saputo bullets cease, Paulie and I are stepping out, unloading our magazines and taking out two more men. In the middle of the massive foyer is a fountain constructed of baby angels, water spouting from their mouths to create a serene ambience. I don't like it. I turn toward two of the bodies strewn on the tile floor, grab them by the collars, and drag them toward the fountain. Then I throw their bodies into it, and their blood slowly pollutes the water until crimson is spitting from the angels' mouths. Much better. Paulie cocks his head, staring thoughtfully at my creation. Nice, he mutters, a grin ticking up one corner of his mouth. Then he turns and zips down the hallway while I climb the stairs, taking two steps at a time. Leonardo's office is on the third floor, and I have a feeling it's where he and Manny currently are. The second floor is comprised of another expansive living area with a few other large rooms branching off from it. I check each area, ensuring no one is hiding. After deeming the floor empty, I head toward the far back wall in the main area where the second staircase is. The third floor is an open concept, the middle completely exposed and allowing a view of the second level. Closed doors are littered across all four walls, though several of them open just as I reach the final step, loud shouts ringing from their pack sets and alerting them of my arrival. I'm firing before I can process who spills out from the rooms. While spraying bullets with one hand, I fumble for the nearest doorknob to my left and rush into the room, scarcely missing a bullet that whizzes past my ear. I'm greeted by a startled scream and a man shouting something indiscernible beneath the gunfire. Lucia kneels on the bed between her new husband's spread legs, entirely nude. Her wet mouth hangs open as she stares at me in utter horror. She still grasps his hard cock, and the man whom it belongs to is just as astounded. These upper rooms are soundproof, and they were unaware of the carnage going on inside the house until this very moment. I don't give them any more time to react. I laugh, aim my weapon, and unload several bullets into the two of them. Their screams quickly die out as blood sprays from multiple points of their body.
"He's in Lucia's room!"
a man shouts. I turn and take aim toward the open doorway, instantly realizing I've depleted my bullets. Footsteps are pounding toward me while I quickly switch out the magazine. I take aim just as a man appears, the two of us firing at the same time. My shoulder jerks, intense pressure erupts, followed by burning pain. Luckily, my aim was true, and the man drops to the floor. Ignoring the searing agony, I wait for the rest of the men to appear. Their shadows stain the doorway right as the telltale sign of a needle catching into vinyl sounds from the depths of the house, followed by a familiar tune. Cesare Andrea Bixio's composition of Mamma Son Tanto Felice plays, and Beniamino Gigli's voice belts out the lyrics, which cause enough of a distraction for me to step out and unload several bullets into the last two men. They drop like flies. All the while, I wear a wide grin. Paulie mentioned once before that he likes to play music when he completes contracts, so I'm confident he's the culprit for the melody playing from below. And I can admit, it adds a nice flair when watching blood paint the walls. I head straight into Leonardo's office. He stands in front of his desk, holding his own Tommy gun, while Manny Baldelli stands beside him. They glare at me with beady eyes, though sweat slicks their thinning hair, and the weapon trembles in Leo's hold.
"You shouldn't have come here, Ronnie,"
Leo calls, attempting to choke down his fear.
"Come on, you're already hurt, and I don't want to see you dead, but I will if I must. You're a good man, but you're blind to your friend. You know as well as I do, Manny is the rightful godfather. The Salvatore stole his birthright from beneath him, and any man with honor would never respect that."
"You speak of honor, yet you refuse to acknowledge that the Baldelli's great-grandfather had no ties to the mob. He was a caffone in an empty suit, desperate to belong to something that was never his to claim."
"That's not true,"
Manny roars, his face reddening and spittle flying from his mouth. "Maybe, maybe not. But it doesn't change the Baldelli roots. They've always been simple men playing dress-up in mobster clothing." "You move exactly like he did," I respond stoically. "Undermining authority and laying claim to something that was never rightfully yours. Seems it runs in your bloodline." Absolute rage overtakes Manny, and he's reaching for the Tommy gun in Leo's hand, intent on shooting me himself. I don't let him get that far, though. During their struggle, I lay my finger down on the trigger, the vibrations from my gun filling my body and sparking euphoria. In a matter of seconds, metal fills Don Manny and Don Leo's bodies, their eyes wide in disbelief as they fall to the floor. Approaching the two men cautiously, I mumble a few of the lyrics alongside Beniamino Gigli. Leo's eyes are wide open, devoid of life and destined to rot inside a body that decayed his soul years ago. Manny is still alive, though, his breath whistling from his punctured lungs as he glares up at me. How poetic that he spent 5 months recovering only to find himself in front of my barrel once again. He coughs up blood, his red face violently trembling as he attempts to reach for the fallen weapon beside him. I kick it aside, and his dilated eyes sear into me.
"Fuck you!"
he spits, hardly managing to get the words out.
I crouch over him, ensuring my pleased smile is the last thing he sees before his entire body deflates, giving out on him and releasing his soul to the pits of fire below. This time, I leave no room for error. I stand and unload my gun into the two men again, my bullets decorating their faces until they're nothing more than meat and bone. There will be no surviving me a second time. When I'm satisfied, Paulie's voice rings out from behind me.
Didn't Angelo tell us to bring Manny's head? There's nothing left of it now.
Staring down at the corpses, I hum, adrenaline coursing steadily through my veins and numbing the pain in my shoulder. Even still, my finger is still itching to unload a few more magazines. I turn and meet his stare. As usual, he wears a blank expression, but there's a gleeful glint in his eyes. I chuckle quietly. No, there isn't. And maybe it's just me, but it still doesn't feel like enough, does it? The slightest smirk plays on Polly's lips.
Not nearly enough.
Chapter 31, The Phantom, January 16th, 1945.
Tell me about her.
Alfonso has just left, leaving me sitting before Angelo's desk while he puffs on a cigar. The two of us alone, aside from the small pile of cocaine before him. He stares at me calmly, but there's a hint of challenge in his eyes, as if he's daring me to lie to him. I tap my fingers on the armrest, contemplating how much I should divulge.
You may be my consigliere, Ronnie, but I would hope that you didn't forget you are my friend, my brother, above all else.
I sigh. She's the love of my life. He nods slowly, his gaze studious.
I knew there was something deeper between you two when you defied my orders and prevented Paulie from taking her. Even more so after the party, when I saw you sneak after her to the powder room.
I tighten my lips, disappointed I wasn't as sly as I had thought I'd been, but certainly not surprised. Even inebriated, Angelo has always had a sharp eye.
I've left you alone on the matter because I had hoped you would come to me if it ever became serious. But I see I was wrong.
Angelo,
do you know there's a certain look to a man when a woman is taking care of him? Since I've known you, you've always had this...
He twirls his hand, searching for the word.
Hardness about you. And for as long as I can remember, I've been waiting for the day when a woman would come around and soften you.
He takes another puff of his cigar.
It appears that day has arrived, and it's the wife of my accountant, no less.
She was mine before he was yours, I grumble.
Which is why you saved him. For her.
I nod once, grinding my teeth. Angelo and I rarely discuss our feelings. While we hide nothing from one another, we rarely discuss our feelings, only divulging emotions that are necessary. I shift, discomfort wrapping its claws around my bones.
You love her,
he states plainly.
Since when?
I sigh and grab a damn cigar from his table, deciding I'm gonna need it to get through this conversation. My nose will never touch cocaine, so tobacco it is. Since I first saw her, truthfully, our affair has been going on for quite some time.
And John? Does he know?
Of course not. He would... I clench my jaw, fury constraining my vocal cords for a moment. He would likely hurt her if he did. That has Angelo raising a brow,
unimpressed with that new knowledge of John. While my boss hasn't always been the most faithful, he retains respect for his wife. He'd never lay a hand on her, and despite his occasional infidelity, he treats her like a queen.
You know, Judge Jones would accommodate anything I asked of him.
They have a daughter. Angelo has a few judges in his pocket, as a matter of fact, and it's an advantage I've considered before. Yet it's one I haven't brought up to her, considering how adamant she is to keep her family together. I've threatened to kill John on many occasions only because my anger got the best of me and I can't stand the thought of him drawing breath. But after our argument a few days ago, I don't know that she even wants to divorce him. It's frowned upon to be a single mother, and she wants Sarah to grow up in a home with both parents. She can only think of her daughter, and I can't blame her, I continue. Angelo cocks his head.
Is that the only barrier between you two? She knows what you do, correct?
She knows my position, though I do not divulge our business to her. But yes, my job is another point of contention. My lifestyle is dangerous, and she fears for her daughter's safety. He's quiet for a few beats, staring at me thoughtfully while he takes another puff of his cigar, the jewels of his ring glinting off the overhead lights.
You understand you're only my consigliere, yes?
I frown. Yes?
Which means I do not require you to complete contracts or put yourself in more harm's way. You've made your bones, Ronnie.
I sigh, understanding where he's going with this. It's not my job to whack people, but I do it anyway because of the release it brings me. I enjoy it more than any normal man should. But handling the contracts personally puts me and my loved ones in more danger of retaliation. This life is not one I can leave, but it is one that will allow me to retreat into the shadows, where it's not only safer for myself, but also a family, too.
Having a family is a strain on the heart for those of us in the position we're in. We both understand that, but that also means that we make sacrifices to ensure our families stay safe. We make sacrifices to ensure our own happiness.
He finishes his cigar, stubbing it out while piercing me with his stare through the smoke billowing before his face.
Killing offers you relief, but you must decide if ending a life is better than experiencing your own, my friend.
January 17th, 1945. I've always enjoyed watching Genevieve squirm. There's something innately satisfying about making her nervous. I haven't visited since our fight, mostly because I've been busy with work since I cleared the Saputo estate, but partly because I'm injured, and I know the moment she realizes, it'll only prove her point about why we can't be together.
I've missed you.
She breathes, twiddling with her fingers. She stands before her rocking chair, shifting anxiously, waiting for me to make a move. I am a little displeased that she didn't run to me as she usually does, but I also can't deny my enjoyment from watching her. I missed you, my love, I say softly, slowly approaching her. She swallows, attracting my attention to where her throat bobs. I'm certain her pulse is hammering beneath the delicate flesh there, and my teeth clench with the urge to bite it. She's always felt